From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, July 17th, 2026. The ICE agent who allegedly shot a Colombian man in Biddeford Monday has been the subject of several protection from abuse and harassment orders, according to court records. As Patty White reports, his ex-wife describes her former husband as an intimidating and violent person. And just to note, this story includes graphic descriptions of violence.
In an interview with NPR, Ashley Brulette says that David Brulette hit her, choked her, and after one fight, threatened her with a gun.
I walked away and I got in the shower and he comes in with a gun and points it at me and tells me that he's going to blow my brains all over the bathtub.
She also shared a voicemail in which Brulette said she and all females in her family should have their throats cut. She says the pair were married for a year and a half. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And days after the ICE shooting of 25-year-old Johann Sebastian Duran Guerrero in Biddeford, his death is reverberating across the U.S. and in his native Colombia, sparking tearful remembrances and fervent protests. In Biddeford itself, long a city of immigrants, his family, friends, and community are grappling with the loss of a young man who worked hard to provide for his family. And on Thursday, in the basement of the Lincoln Hotel in downtown Biddeford, Carolina Rojas Alvarez stood at a podium in front of a crowd of reporters gathered to hear her first public statement since the death of her partner.
Johann Sebastian Duran Guerrero era un hombre juicioso, trabajador, entregado a su familia.
Johann Sebastian Duran Guerrero, he was a responsible man, a hard worker devoted to his family. He always dreamed big, and he had so many dreams left to fulfill. He did everything to see me happy. He always said I was his life, and that he dreamed of a whole lifetime with me. He always told me, until we're little old people.
Arm in arm with Duran Guerrero's sister and speaking through an interpreter, Rojas Alvarez painted a portrait of the man she described as kind and joyful, who treated her like a queen, she said, and devoted himself to caring for their 3-year-old daughter.
From the moment he learned he would have a little princess, everything in him changed. He always said, that little girl will never lack for anything. And that's how it was. From the moment he held her in his arms and held her tiny hand, he never let her go.
While Rojas Alvarez and the rest of Duran Guerrero's family are confronting his loss, the shooting has also sent shockwaves through an immigrant community where there are few degrees of separation.
It was so, still been feeling sad.
Nancy is a resident of Biddeford who asked to be identified only by her first name because her own citizenship application is still in process. She works in the restaurant industry and says she knew Duran Guerrero through his work as a delivery driver. Like him, she's also from Colombia.
When they say it's from your country, you just take that one so in your heart.
Biddeford has long attracted people from all over the world seeking to carve out a living here. In the 1800s and 1900s, waves of French Canadian and Irish immigrants came to work in the textile mills. Sam Smithwick, language coordinator at Biddeford Adult Education, says more recent arrivals are from the Middle East, Central Africa, and Latin America. He says many are eager to advance their careers and give back to their community.
An overwhelming number of new Mainers are changing careers and moving into healthcare. And most often when I ask them what prompted that change, their response is, Maine took care of me and I want to take care of Maine.
Smithwick says that leads to unexpected moments of connection between immigrants new and old.
Someone speaking about their mother or father that are in an elder care facility and reverting back to the French language, and they have a French nurse from Haiti taking care of them. That's a special gift that you get in a city of immigrants.
But the sense of safety and belonging that generations of immigrants have found here has been strained for months under the weight of increased ICE activity. At an Angolan market downtown, shop owner Andre is ringing up a customer who came in for 5 rolls of doughy cassava bread.
Okay, merci.
Andre, who asked to be identified only by his first name out of concern for his own safety, says that customer's husband was arrested by ICE just last week, and one of the pastors at his church was detained a couple months ago. He says some immigrants are now trying to leave in hopes of finding safety elsewhere.
They are trying to go and move, find another safe place.
Andre says for his part, he has no plans to move. His family owns a house, he says, and his kids, who went through the local school system, feel at home here. But business is down, and he says the fact that Duran Guerrero wasn't even the target of the ICE operation that ended in his death makes him afraid that it could happen to anyone. As he stocks a cooler with water bottles on this steamy July afternoon, Andre says he understands that some people in this country don't like immigrants, despite the central role that they've played in the country's history.
The roots of this country start from immigrants.
Trying to push them out, he says, it's like cutting off the roots of your own tree. And in other news, Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree says President Trump's national address Thursday night, quote, wasted citizens' time. President Trump used the address to claim that the country's voting systems are vulnerable to being rigged and stolen, while providing no new evidence of fraudulent voting in 2020. Pingree says Trump's push to pass the SAVE Act, which is aimed at overhauling the country's elections, is frustrating for many Mainers who like the voting system as it is.
I mean, two of the things that are particularly critical in the SAVE Act is it makes absentee ballot and mail-in balloting much more difficult.
Pingree says Trump doesn't have the support to get the measure through Congress and that his Thursday speech likely isn't going to persuade anyone. None of the other 3 members of Maine's congressional delegation would comment on the president's address. Meanwhile, 8 of the 12 candidates vying for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate seat faced off last night at a debate televised by News Center Maine. Candidates discussed how immigration and customs enforcement should be reformed to prevent more shootings like the one that happened in Biddeford on Monday. Secretary of State Shenna Bellows said the Immigration and Naturalization Service, which preceded ICE, did not have weapons.
In 2003, it was one of my first campaigns, they said we needed ICE to replace INS. Well, I remember a day when the thugs weren't in the government and they didn't have arms.
The Maine Democratic Party will select a nominee at a special convention next week to challenge incumbent Republican Senator Susan Collins in the fall. The state of Maine will not be able to open a program this summer intended to help homeowners pay for roof replacements or improvements. The Maine Bureau of Insurance had planned to start taking applications this summer, but the agency said due to administrative delays, that process will be pushed back until next year. The state says the $15 million Fortify Maine program will give grants to homeowners to help them replace their roofs and make their homes more resilient to severe weather events. And now it's time for Maine's Political Pulse. That's our regular analysis of politics and government. Graham Plattner's withdrawal from Maine's high-profile U.S. Senate race has triggered a mad dash among Democratic leaders in the state to line up a replacement candidate to challenge Republican Senator Susan Collins. The first major step in that process begins this weekend and will culminate next Saturday when about 600 Democrats representing all 16 Maine counties will select a new nominee. We're joined now by Maine Public State House correspondent Kevin Miller. He'll try to walk us through this complicated and some say unprecedented process. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Ari. And yes, this is a complicated multi-step process. And quite frankly, not all the details have even come to light yet. But I will do my best to explain what I know.
All right. Well, let's start, Kevin, by having you walk us through the timeline of this process.
Right. So the first step, as you mentioned, takes place this weekend. Democrats from across Maine will gather this Saturday and Sunday at the county level to select 500 delegates who will then attend a special nominating convention next weekend in Bangor. Each county has a specific number of delegates, and this is based on their population. So sparsely populated counties like Piscataquis and Franklin, they have less than 10 delegates, while Cumberland has 149. So whoever the counties select as delegates, they will join 101 Democratic State Committee members from around the state. And together, these 601 Democrats will be the people who will choose the new nominee on July 25th.
And can you remind us why the nomination process is so rushed?
Simply put, it's state law. Graham Plattner only had until Monday, July 13th to formally withdraw and to have his name removed from the ballot. Yeah, he did that last week after determining that he no longer had a realistic path to victory because of the rape allegations against him, which I should add he has strongly denied. But under state law, the party then had just 2 weeks, so until July 27th, to send a new nominee's name to the Secretary of State. Otherwise, Senator Collins would be unopposed on the fall ballot, and Democrats in Maine and across the country really don't want that.
And there are 12 declared candidates running for the Senate nomination, right?
Yes, 12. There were 13, but Paige Loud dropped out this week. That number could drop again next week. I suspect that not everyone will be able to gather the 500 signatures they need to officially qualify for the convention. But as of right now, I'd say the best-known candidates are Shenna Bellows, Troy Jackson, and Nirav Shah, all of whom ran for governor in last month's primary, along with congressional candidate Jordan Wood. David Costello, who ran against Plattner in the Senate primary, is back again as well. Beer brewer Dan Kleben is running, and then there are a half dozen newer names. Elizabeth Cody, Elizabeth Dickerson, Joseph Levi, Christina Libby, Sondra Pelletier, and Ashley Webb.
Okay, so let's talk about this weekend's meetings to select the delegates. How are those being held and who can participate?
Well, it depends on the county. Most counties are holding in-person meetings, but a handful, which are typically the larger counties, they are doing the whole thing online. But I will add that even the in-person meetings will have a Zoom option for people who are interested but can't get there. And as for who can participate, it is open to anyone who is registered as a Democrat on June 9th, which was the date of the primary elections. Yeah, I'm sure that some people are asking, well, what about independents? Because they were allowed to vote in the primaries. But Democratic leaders have said that because this is an internal Democratic process, they're saying that only registered Democrats can vote for delegates.
Gotcha. So how is the actual voting going to happen?
All voting will be done electronically, whether you are in person or Zooming in. The details still aren't 100% clear to me, but as I understand it, the party will be using a special elections app, and that will enable them to vote for their county delegates, either on their phones or on tablets or on laptops. And then there will also be machines set up at the in-person meeting locations if people need help with that process. And according to the party, the benefit of doing it this way is that it will be one uniform system and the results will be available almost immediately.
And do we know how many people want to be delegates?
Well, there are more than 3,000 applicants, I believe, running for those 500 delegate spots. But then thousands more people have pre-registered to vote for their local delegates, and the meetings also have same-day registration. So just as one example, I attended a Hancock County Dems meeting Thursday night in Ellsworth, and more than 600 people had pre-registered for their Saturday meeting, and more were expected to sign up.
And how does it work as far as who a delegate will support once they get to the convention? Are delegate candidates saying who their preferred nominee is? Are they even allowed to do that?
So they are allowed to declare who they plan to support, but they're not required to. So some are and some aren't. And I think it's interesting. There's a lot of debate among Democrats about whether delegates should. During that meeting in Ellsworth that I attended, I heard multiple voters say that they want to know who a delegate is backing before they'll consider voting for them. Others said no, they want delegates to keep an open mind. But I think it's important to add here that because the delegates will be the ones choosing the nominee on July 25th, this has set up a situation where the Senate candidates are trying to get their supporters to run as delegates, to try to kind of pack the room, as they say.
So it sounds like some candidates are campaigning for delegates even before this weekend's meeting.
Yeah, that's definitely happening. And I think it's safe to say that the best-known candidates, meaning those who just ran for governor and Congress, they have an advantage here because they have the name recognition. And they had campaign staff who can help try to recruit delegates. And, you know, frankly, not everyone is happy about this. But I'll just add that just as there's no obligation for a delegate to commit to a candidate beforehand, there's also nothing preventing them from changing their minds at the convention.
And lastly, do you have a sense of who is leading the race for the nomination at this point, or is it just too complicated to say?
Yeah, I think it's undeniable that the former primary candidates, you know, people like Dr. Shah, Shenna Bellows, Jordan Wood, Troy Jackson, and even David Costello, they have an obvious advantage during this process. They've been on the campaign trail for months, so people know them, but I can't say that there's a clear frontrunner among that group. And I know the other candidates are working hard to try to make inroads and, you know, perhaps find some would-be delegates willing to support them. And I guess I'll just close by saying that this process really is unprecedented for Maine. So who knows how things will shake out over the next 2 weekends.
And that was Maine Public Statehouse correspondent Kevin Miller. You can find a longer version of this conversation online at mainepublic.org/pulse, where you can also sign up for the Political Pulse newsletter. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.